Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from a report that I've had to make recently of what I call child abuse happening among us. What the world does. I have no authority over the world. I have no authority even in the church, but I am a voice. I want to be a voice. And I'm hoping there will be other voices that will be raised up against what's going on in some Christian families, quite honestly, but also in group homes and what they call homes for the troubled or troubled teens. There's a lot of different ways this is all said, and I'm not going to be specific about the places or the people, but the cries I'm going to be specific about as much as I can, because I got these from specific people. They will be unnamed. They're named online. You go out, do a search on Christian child abuse or whatever, and you'll find these people's stories. Let me read from Psalm 31 today. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. My eye wastes away with grief. Yes, my soul and my body, for my life is spent with grief, and my years, that is, with sighing. I hear the slander of many, fears on every side. You say, Bob, you must really be going through it. Those are the words of David. No, that's not David, and that's not Bob in this case. This is the cries of people who would say a big amen to me if I would say, would that passage from the Psalms describe how you felt at one time in a Christian home, Christian family? I realize that I am not the person, in one sense, to be speaking about these things. As I raised my own children, they weren't being beaten every night, they weren't being abused and all that sort of thing, but they were verbally at times abused, they were restricted too much. I was not good at this, and I recognize it. God's giving me other opportunities. I've said this before, I need to keep saying this. I feel the heaviness of the hand of God upon me, not only to share with you, but to be very, very careful about how I share this. And I'll explain more of that in a minute. If I were wanting to respond to those people, boys and girls, who have been abused in Christian homes throughout the area, throughout the nation, I would respond with a word from Jesus in Matthew 28. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That's Matthew 11:28. And Charles Spurgeon, commenting on that same psalm from his Treasury of David, he says, many saints have had their greatest enlargement of soul when their affairs have been in the greatest straits. Their souls have been in a large room, but their bodies have been lying in some narrow dungeon. Grace has been equal to every emergency, and more than this, grace has made the emergency an opportunity for displaying itself. Only Spurgeon can put words together like that. You say, you're calling these teenagers saints? Well, yeah, we're talking about Christian homes. Now listen carefully. These Christian group homes or whatever, they only invite people, some of them, who have come up in the church. And it is true that some of these, I don't know how many, I don't know the percentage, but some of these people who come into these homes are truly saved people. And the homes would agree, yeah, these are saved people. They just need a lot of help from us. And yet if they're saved, are they not saints? And doesn't Spurgeon apply to them? I understand that the people in charge are having their problems. There's no question raising teenagers is not an easy thing. But I'm talking about the other people, the saints, the other saints. The church needs to protect both ends of this thing. I'm pretty much aware that the leaders, the people in charge, are being protected quite well, thank you, but not necessarily the other side. Who's going to protect some of these people? My Bible tells me to remember the prisoners Oh, come on now, you're going too far. Calling these people prisoners? Yeah, well, when you hear the testimonies in a little while, you'll agree. Look, if prison is a place to which you go when you've done bad things, and if prison is a place where you don't want to be, but you can't escape from, or it's a place where bad things can happen, well, then unfortunately there are some Christian families and group home ministries that must be classified as a prison. And therefore, the scriptural injunction does follow. Be mindful of the prisoners as though you were bound with them. Will you put yourself in their place just for a little while? Will you try to empathize? Will you try to feel what they were feeling? Some of them a long time ago, some of them right now. There have always been people and in these jails, places of incarceration, who were kind of glad to be there for reasons of their own. And there's people at the Cook County Jail who are glad to be there. They'd rather be there than on the street somewhere. They're not wanted anywhere else, in fact. They're being fed. They're kept in line by harsh rules. In fact, they've forgotten how to live their own lives and discipline themselves. Some of these children that we are talking about would have been called bad kids. Yeah, it's true. They were arrested, quote unquote, by parents in many cases, brought by deception or force to some facility, abandoned by the arresters, and forced into a sentence of many months, if not years. It's true. Yeah, it really does happen. I'm not making this up. And like in most prisons, some people escape. And some people escape successfully, never come back, and some are returned, and we can imagine punished. Others are able to prove their abuse, though, and they stay out for good. Well, you say, Bob, you're making this up. You're trying to be dramatic here. No, folks, Christians, I'm only talking to Christians here. Do the research. See if you agree that something is amiss in some of our homes, houses, people, families I'm talking about, and in some facilities that call themselves a home for the troubled, but they've become a part of the trouble themselves in some cases. If I've misspoken, please show me where. And by the way, there are some good places out there. Oh, I know. I may be talking to people who had to go to one of these homes and it was the best thing that ever happened to you. You're so glad. Okay, no problem. But I've become aware that it's not like that everywhere. Now, I've got in big letters here as I move on, and I'm reading this, but this is something that I wrote. All this I wrote, except for the scriptures themselves. And it says, judge not. Judge not. Is it possible, folks, for us as Christians to discern error, to point it out without having a judgmental spirit? That's our calling, isn't it? When we condemn, we get ourselves in serious trouble with the Lord. I fear Him. I tremble at His word. You can read Matthew 7 yourself. But the cries of the suffering must not fall on deaf ears either. We're not looking for retribution from anyone, only correction. And we know this, that what we seek in others, and I'm asking for correction, God's going to bring to us. You demand justice? Ooh, I don't know if I'm even asking for justice here. But correction? Oh, yeah. You're going to get it, because what He started in you, and I'm talking to Christians, He's going to finish. He's going to have a perfect church. When all is said and done, it will be perfect. And maybe you went through a really, really bad home in the past. And in spite of that, you know, that was kind of like part of your fire, your testing, your purging right then. Okay, it wasn't good. It wasn't supposed to happen, but it happened, and you're better for it, but in that negative sort of sense. What about accusing an elder, the leaders of these churches, and I'm sorry, these homes? The passage is 1 Timothy 4:19. Don't accuse an elder. That letter was written from an apostle to a member of his team. Did you know that Timothy was not a pastor in the modern sense, except on a temporary basis? He was a part of the apostolic team. And the office of pastor in those days was a shared one. Oh yeah, look it up. There was no, you won't ever find the words "the pastor" in the Bible. It's always a group, and pastor and elder, shepherd, bishop, all these terms are interchangeable. And there was a plurality so that one person wouldn't come to the top, as it happened in Rome and some other places. It happens a lot of places today. But it's supposed to be a shared thing. But Timothy had been assigned temporarily to this Ephesian church in order to ordain a group of elders. That's what it says. Read it. In Titus 2, Titus and Timothy were put where they were to put the church together and to ordain some elders and then get out of there, come back to Paul or go on to another assignment. There was no kingdom, no kingdom building back in those days. Paul's instruction here is never to receive an accusation against an elder unless there's two or three witnesses. Hearsay won't do it. Someone must have seen the wrong activity. Well, I think it says two or three. We've got literally hundreds of people who have seen this kind of abuse going on. And so, yes, we can speak to these church leaders. And if the accusations keep mounting, we must speak against them. And they do keep mounting. Well, the entire passage from verses 17 to 22 in that chapter in Timothy is about church eldership. Paul goes on to say that those elders who turn out to be in error need to be rebuked before the congregation so that the congregation may fear, realizing that no one is above the law of God. I've indicted myself already. I've suggested that some of my listeners need to judge themselves too. Included in this indictment are homes like the homes that we were talking about in various states, where such abuse is not monitored by the state. But none of that clears me or anyone aware of these sad events from allowing these people, some people here that I'm going to bring before you without their names, to bring forth their clear and painful memories. If you were in one of these places, you probably need to shut this off right now, because I'm going to be talking about some things that you experienced that will only bring back very bad memories for the rest of us. We need that memory. We need that. We need to hear it. And we need to cry. We need to remember the prisoners, remember those that are hurting. Let me present to you some of the cries of incarcerated children. Some of them are in secular places, some in places bearing the name Christian. And many of these crying out are middle-aged adults now and older, telling their stories so that God's people will do something. Some are saved people. All of them need a healing. And all of them are the reason for this series. All have broken my heart. All of them will break your heart, Christian. I've taken all these cries and I've put them together into categories. I've included random statements under each category, actual statements, but random, combined into just one big person. We're just pretending this is all one big person. It's not. It's many, many people. But each individual little statement is from a real person. Nothing at all fictitious about the list I'm about to share with you. And we'll not be able to do much of it today. We'll start it today and we'll finish it tomorrow. Or the next time we do this in real time, that'll be 3 or 4 days from now. These people being abused could have been your child or sibling or friend or fellow church member. Take it seriously. Category 1 was excessive physical punishment. Here's a person said, I was so bruised from beatings, I couldn't sit or sleep comfortably. I heard screaming from the punishment room often. I couldn't sit after a beating. I was told I was being overly dramatic. I urinated all over myself while being paddled severely 7 or 8 times. Then I had to sit on my wounds. I was told that beatings would rid my soul of its wicked ways. I was so shaken by a beating they had me breathing into a brown paper bag. Too much drama for you already, folks? Well, that's just one category. Oh, I'm making these categories very, very short. There are hundreds of little statements I could have put. But I'm going to keep it short for your sake. It is hard to bear. About meals withheld, or forced food, or substandard food, or sickening food. If my work was not done well, I could have dinner withheld from me. I went to bed hungry many nights. I was often fed expired Dole lettuce with expired salad dressing. I was fed rotten vegetables. I was fed burnt oatmeal. I was fed Alpo dog food. No meals was a form of punishment. That's the second category. How about the shame of adolescent bedwetting? What? Yeah, because of scheduled bathroom breaks, often I wet the bed. If I wet the bed, I have to strip the sheets in the morning, wash my plastic mattress, and get paddled. I was forced to wear a diaper. All my peers were made aware that I had to wear a diaper. How about verbal abuse, humiliation, shame? That's a category. I was called lazy. I was called filthy. I was called disgusting. I was told that my hair would be growing out because harlots wear their hair short. I was broken down and humiliated at every turn. I was called worthless or harlot. Folks, listen. We understand parents and these leaders, they get burnt out sometimes. They say things they don't mean. And we're not talking to those kind of people at all. We make those mistakes, folks. We're talking about policy. We're talking about policy. Was any of this policy? Well, it seems that it was. From the number of kinds of things that keep coming out, some of them from one place and some from another, but it seems like this was the rule. This was how it was supposed to be, and it was okay, and nobody got corrected because of saying it. How about mounting stress, anxiety, and fear? I often cried myself to sleep. I was afraid to speak out against atrocities I saw around me. I worried about whether so-and-so would scream at us. I worried about whether our chores would pass inspection. I worried about what the next meal was going to taste like. Would the food be old and dangerous to eat? And then there's total control and manipulation. Accused of not washing after using the toilet. I protested, and so I was accused of arguing and possibly lying. I was told there was no place to run to, that neighbors were friends of our place as well as the police. Total control. Manipulation. Many of them testified in this one place that they were strip searched on arrival. Does this sound like anything Jesus is into? I may be wrong. I may be wrong. But it just doesn't sound like the Lord to me. I just can't see Jesus standing there and saying, yes, my brother, yes, my sister, that is a wonderful way to deal with that child. That child really needs that. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. May the Lord forgive us all for weaknesses in these areas. That's all we're going to do this time around. I will finish that list. Since you know it's coming and you don't want to come back to that, I understand you can meet up with me after the next audio, if you like. And after the next, what am I going to be talking about? Let's see. Let me scroll down here. After the next one, I'm going to tell a little about me and why I'm involved in this. And so you know whether you can trust me or not. I'm going to talk about brokenness that next time, the real biblical kind of brokenness, not the kind that some of these groups go after. And I'm going to talk about the Prisoner television show many years ago. It's some interesting stuff coming up. I do hope you'll join me. God bless you today. Do look, since we're talking about prisons and so forth, would you look at my North Korea audios? Yeah, I care about those kind of things. God puts that on our heart to care about the suffering church. These are our brothers and sisters, and they've been there a long time, and they're suffering right now as we have our relative comfort here. Would you pray for North Korea? And I've given you a lot of ways to pray about them with the photos and the audios right here on this site. A bunch of other stuff on this site too. Go browsing and enjoy. And the Lord willing, we'll talk soon. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Bye-bye.